Many, many great people have discussed the union and the connection between the mind, body, and soul. But not too many people understand it as well as our panel of guests. But we have to start from the beginning. We have to start from the creation of the universe. How do the cosmos play into everything? Santos Bonacci speaks about astrotheology. Dan Winter breaks it down scientifically. And seven, well, seven can just go for 3 or 4 hours without taking a breath. All these great guests have been guests on the show previously, and it's such a pleasure to have them all on. Let's go to Santos first. Santos, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you very much.
Absolutely, absolutely. Give us your websites real quick before we begin.
UniversalTruthSchool.com, which will link you to the astrotheology, Mr. Astrotheology YouTube page, which has all my videos.
Excellent, excellent. Didn't you have a recent video that came out, or are you working on that and it's coming out soon?
I posted one about 10 days ago, which is doing pretty good. It's up about 15,000 hits already, so and I'm getting some good, positive comments back from people about that one. It's called Secret of Secrets, The Elixir of Life, Hiding in the Bible.
Excellent, excellent. And Seven, welcome back to the show.
Oh, man, it's definitely good to be forward, and it's just an awesome night for us. I mean, I'm super excited over here. I'm just got my coolers running just to stay, you know, stay cool.
Nice. What's going on at resistance2010.com?
Oh, lots of stuff. We definitely have a show coming up tomorrow, so I'm going to be doing it back-to-back. We're going to talk about the origins of language, and we're just continuously expanding more with the universal system. And, of course, that's www.astroquest.com. So, like I said, I'm just really, really excited to be here and working for the universe.
Excellent, excellent. And Mr. Dan Winter, who blew my mind on the last show, and I'm sure he's going to do it again this show. Welcome back, sir.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Definitely. Give us your websites really quick.
Goldenmean.info is the main website, and also fractalfield.com. Also, we just released our iPhone software for heart entrainment empathy at heartsring.com.
Excellent, excellent. Let's start from the very beginning. Can you break down the creation of the universe and how that's affecting us today?
Well, you know, I sort of agreed with Dwayne Elgin's theory of continuous creation, that the Big Bang is continuous, and I think the biggest clue is the structure of hydrogen, which we have new equations for. Basically, the common musical signature of the universe is clearly Planck length and time, and perfect exponents times golden ratio of that give you hydrogen radii, hydrogen frequency, and also the wavelengths precisely of the two wavelengths of photosynthesis and the duration of the Earth year and the Venus year. So clearly the fractality of the universe is defined beautifully right in the structure of hydrogen and Planck. And so that tells us, for example, how the frequencies of things like Schumann resonance and the brainwave alpha of bliss are structured. It's the musical sort of swan song of the universe.
And Mr. Astrotheology, Santos Bonacci, can you expand on that at all? Because I know that you bring more of a spiritual and esoteric idea behind that.
Yes, well, in the Priscatheologia, the ancients had the system of emanation, whereby everything proceeded from the cause through the demiurge, which would be the element of fire in Plato's four elements, the four solids, which is light and the photon, and then proceeds through air, water, and earth. And you'll always find varying lists or lists with different designations for those four elements. For instance, Plutarch, speaking on Plato, says that fire is movement, air is identity, water is differentiation, and earth is rest. So from fire to earth, you've got this movement and rest. The movement is the electrical electromagnetic force that comes out of this cause, undivided light. And this electricity, you see, that's why you see L is so prominent in our theology. You'll find L everywhere, Bible, angel, gospel, etc. So the fire is the mover. Everything is movement in the universe, motion, and that's the fire principle, you see, acting on the other lower principles, the lower emanations. Yeah, so there's your metaphysical approach, I guess.
Excellent, excellent. And seven, I think you can tie them both in together. Take us away.
Definitely. The two gentlemen did a definite job at giving us the micro-macro of exactly how it looks. I definitely have been into the Gnostic text and understand the Gnostic description of how the universe was formed. I think just for simplicity for people, it's just everything that exists has a germ, a seed or a ovum that it starts in or starts from a matrix, and we see that as a sphere or a circle. So we get that kind of as our first quote-unquote letter. And so I think everything in itself comes out of a portal. And then as Dan Winter was speaking of, the phi ratio and that procession, which is also known as even the pentagram, is how this universe begins to spiral and form itself. Of course, I've looked a lot more deeper into what kind of beings can put that together, whether that just has a spontaneous reaction infinitely throughout universes, or is someone in possession of this knowledge. And so that's, of course, where I've gone a little bit deeper with my work, is identifying who has been using this kind of system to create worlds. But I would say our beginning definitely starts from a germ type stage, and we've been constantly going through metamorphosis in these matrices that's based on geometry of us moving through lives and experience and gaining rings like a tree to become more complex or more simple beings, depending upon, you know, how you're working your balance.
Wow. I think you said it perfectly, and you mentioned the pentagram, I should say. Dan Winter, how does that play into sacred geometry?
Well, the stellation of the pentagram in 2D, which is the stellation of the pentadodeca in 3D, is clearly, and we have new mathematic evidence, is the geometry of not just DNA, but hydrogen itself, and even new information that stellation of the platonic solids, dodecahedrons on the outside and tetrahedrons on the inside, is precisely the SPDF subshells, the electron shell kind of table, S being toroidal, P pi being tetracube, and DNF 5-7 pair 10-14. Electron being dodecahedron. And then with the work of Moon at University of Chicago showing that the geometry of the hadrons, protons and neutrons, the nucleus is also precisely platonic. And the new information is that the platonic symmetry of the nucleus and the platonic symmetry of the electrons means that the atom in the atomic table is self-similar electron with respect to nuclear, namely fractal. So it's all fitting together rather nicely. And the new information there, again, is that since golden ratio, of course, the stellation of the pent is what rules that symmetry, dodecahedrosa, it is, in fact, that golden ratio that causes that field effect, that relationship between electron and nucleus, to be centripetal, namely the cause of gravity.
Scott in New York, do you want to take us away? Are you still with us?
Sorry, yeah.
There you are.
I had it muted. Actually, this one would be more directed towards Sivan, but the correlation of Venus to the five fractal of the five-sided pentagon and how it formulates basically the majority of life forms on Earth into fractals of five. I was just wondering if you could expound upon that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that even Santos mentioned earlier the heavy emphasis on L, especially with the fire language of Hebrew. And any scholar, of course, digging into etymology and language looks into the Arabic also, because oftentimes the Hebrew is used to authenticate the Arabic, and that's generally the back and forth between scholars now. But within the symbols, it's actually the terminology of the Egyptian R, which actually became, from my understanding, especially through ancient writings, the R was the pentagram itself. So it was known as the R sign. And, of course, we had a plethora of characters coming through our world, especially in the ancient times, bearing this symbol as either their symbol of worship or something that they were affiliated with. And so I think that that, of course, gets us into the use that our ancestors had of Five, which obviously has something to do, Dan Winter could definitely go into depth with it, with the pyramids. What I'm knowing now as a special kind of energy or a secret kind of energy that was being cultivated there using the mathematics and using the knowledge of Phi. And well, I think how this plays into everyone's life, though, and, you know, just in saying all of this, sometimes we can see it as like in science and in spirituality or whatever, but I think people need to really start seeing it inside of you. This is the body that you were put in. And so regardless of the origins and the stories and things, this is things you would have to know in order to be able to move this vehicle around properly. And so I was hoping, especially since the promises that 2012 has been boasting, that at least today that we can start getting some finite answers about, you know, what kind of power is being used, especially within the spiritual sectors, the potential of the body now, in the condition that it actually is in now, which I'm basically saying that after all of what we've dealt with in this society and in this reality, it's like very important to take it from now to what we can do about our situation. And I would just like also the tone of this conversation to be really to think about the children, because there's a lot of us, especially that have learned manifestation and learned techniques of energy, and we're not really experiencing on the physical level hardships anymore, because we've learned the keys of manifestation, et cetera, and the great arcanum. However, what got us actually here was this passion, this even desire, because Venus is connected with desire, it's connected with the mouth, it's connected with asking for what you want. It was this desire for us to see the entire world emancipate into, for those who have had the quote-unquote bliss experiences Dan talks about, some refer to it as a Shekinah in the Gnostic text, some Holy Ghost, but basically when the body goes into a higher vibratory frequency and shakes off a lot of the shells or negative energies that have clasped onto them because of things that people are not even really aware of. And so I would hope we could get into parts of the conversation where we talk about people's everyday life and how they make agreements to allow certain kinds of energies that have already been identified, to bind them and to hold them back so that, you know, we can see some real expansion. So that's, you know, really my answer to that question. I know that we have some time to talk in this conversation, but to me, it's a R or L. That's well, all of the teachings that I've seen.
A little thought on the science there that, you know, we know from the physics of Hebrew that the phase angle or tilt of the torus that casts the shadow, called the Hebrew letter R, which, by the way, is both the capital and the small r, is precisely 90-degree tilt, called L, which means a phase shift. And it turns out, of course, that the physics of color is the same phase conjugation, namely that the visible spectrum, precisely one octave, is the rotation of the photon as a torus in 180 degrees. So the red is facing you, and then the green is a 90-degree tilt. And at that 90-degree tilt of that photon donut, the spiral self-organizing on the donut casts the exact shadow of the letter R, which is in the word for green in almost every language fair, green in Ruan and in Hebrew. And at the 90-degree tilt of the photon that we call green, the letter R, is precisely poison to every living thing, and the reason every plant reflects and doesn't eat green is because a 90-degree tilt, the cube, is opposite to conjugate. It's a charge isolator. It's the opposite of all life. So if you look at the table of frequencies that motorize photosynthesis, there are two, and green is in the middle of them and poisons photosynthesis. So it's called negative green in psychotronics. But the practical implication are, it's well known, of course, that if you wear green, you maximize empathy. You don't wear green unless you want to feel everybody else's feelings. it's an old adage. And it's simply because when you wear green, it means you're reflecting the non-conjugate frequencies and absorbing the conjugate, which is to say the ones that are well distributed, namely the sort of physics of collective mind or empathy itself, namely the other two frequencies of photosynthesis, which are precisely Planck time exponent golden ratio. So, in other words, charge distribution is what makes the collective mind work, and therefore empathy and compassion. Another example of that is the orbit of Venus you mentioned. It's a reverse retrograde pentagram, as seen from Earth, but it's more important that, in fact, the orbital time of Venus, like the orbital time of Earth, is precisely Planck time times the power of golden ratio, which means it's phase conjugate, which is why so Anton Parks so correctly says that in the orbit of Venus, Enki Samuel, Lucifer, his ex-wife, is returning his plasma back to life. In other words, Osiris is rising, and where he's coming back? The orbit of Venus. We wrote all it up in the Physics of Coincidence at goldenmean.info/coincidence, namely that the physics of coincidence is simply charge rotation perfected by fractality. But it's a lesson that only structures which are, in fact, conjugate or pent or golden ratio, which means charge distribution, John, eons, geon, two branch, the meaning of divine, only those are inhabitable. So don't try and fall in love with anything else.
Santos, can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, that was music to my ears. Thanks, Dan. That was exquisite. Yeah, well, I don't know what to say after that. But it appears that the ancients were interested in the study of how to, discriminate and discern which were the good angles coming in and which were the bad angles. Astrology, they're angles or angels, and the language of angels is astrology because it'll tell you the angles. You see, on March the 24th, when I was born, the angle of sunlight piercing through the magnetosphere of the Earth was at 2 degrees Aries. 5 days after that, it's a different angle, you see. So those influences are different. And you see, when someone is born and they draw their first breath, according to astrologers, that's the moment that their crystal, carbon crystal bodies just absorb all the angles from the seven. It's always the seven visible orbs, that is, of the solar system. And, as they react with each other dynamically in their orbits, you see, and you come out of your mother's waters into the air. You've come from the water element to the air element, from differentiation into identity. And, you draw your first breath, and there you go. You've received all those. You see, and as Dan said, the angle of L is 90 degrees, so it has a particular influence. You see, some of those angles are destructive.
It's interesting. If I could chime in on that 90 degrees, because there was names mentioned such as Samael. And what I also see, of course, for people who are just listening to the conversation, so they're wondering, like, okay, well, what are you talking about? Are you talking about on the astral plane? Are you talking about, underneath the microscope, underneath a spectroscope? And, of course, we're actually referring to something that is taking place on all of those subsequent levels, as we understand the universal system. But on the physical world, I think it's important for people to understand that how this R in L is playing out is definitely with the conflict going on between Israel and the Arab countries, which actually even bear the names and the symbols of what we're discussing. So I want to get this just clear for the people. Are we in a realm? Because, of course, I know the answers to these questions, but I think it's important for people to logically come to the answers themselves. Are we in a realm that constantly functions on this level of what Phi shows, as the Chinese explained it, is more like combustion, which is where there's a constant conflict because there is a dualistic being that is on the planet. And through this conflict, they still push along the universe as if they're more or less the feet of the universe that's still responsible, like a Uru carrying the load of the more crown chakra ethereal essence of still ourselves. It's almost like what happens is people don't really understand what's going on. They end up trapped in becoming more of the chariot for the higher state of who they really are. Now, it's also interesting to me that when I even look at the L and the R, because I understand that English in every way, especially for those who understand the Kabbalistic value of English, is attempting to adhere and add to these mystical languages by showing us even with our arms, which is what we use to defend and protect ourselves, what we use to fight, we have a left arm, a L, and a right arm. Then I see, of course, that the right arm to us corresponds more to a physical reality or the external reality, while the left arm is clearly, quote-unquote, the left-hand path, the more the internal situation that we're experiencing. But why is it, and the question is being presented then for myself, why is it that it is so difficult for the teachers that we have now that are using all the tools from the internet and radio shows and things to still just come out and say what has to be said about the situation with these entities? Because if you look at Coast to Coast...
I think to do the science is pure science, we would understand these things, of course, in wave mechanic terms, which is the only purpose of geometry study. The L, which as in Elohim, means ability to make the phase shift. An example would be, of course, that electricity refers to the fact that electric and magnetic forces are only discriminated by whether you measure them in one axis or the perpendicular axis. So electricity and magnetism are never separate. It's just the measurement of flux on the surface of a donut at an L or 90 degree relationship. That's what the relationship of electric and magnetic is. Now, an Elohim, or one who could make that phase shift, was one who could take that translation of vorticity, which is how you name the golden spiral if you study it in hydrodynamics. It's named optimized translation of vorticity. So it's obviously the path around the L. Getting around an L is like in astrology, where a 90-degree or a square relationship is called a stressor. But the physics of that is simple. It's the same reason a square corner is evil in feng shui, because a 90-degree relationship for waves, a cube, creates, of course, powers of two, octave relationships, which create, in physics, maximum destructive wave interference. So obviously a T-square or a square in astrology is going to be a stressor because it's creating destructive wave interference the same way it does in feng shui. But what an Elohim meant in ancient language was more with reference to how that plasma, life force, or aura, is being translated in your body, in your DNA. And if you look at the physics of death, that when you die, of course, you see the four symmetries, lattice, cobweb, tunnel, spiral, from the Cuvée form constants, what everyone sees when they die, the sequence of geometries. And we now know what that is. That's the sequence of the braid spins of DNA saying to your plasma, make the L, which is to say, get ready for compression, implosion, fusion. And if you can get your plasma, your charge, your aura, through the speed of light at the center of the torus, which requires making an L, which is the same thing that happened at Montauk or Philadelphia experiment. You know, the ones whose aura were phase coherent could be compressed and then accelerated, and they did not come back scrambled eggs. Well, the same thing's true about death or lucid dream. Your plasma has to make an L or phase shift, and that's why you can tell if you're going to die well if you can lucid dream well. And that phase shift actually is precisely the translation of vorticity or inertia, which is accelerated through the speed of light in the geometry of your DNA at the very hydrogen core, which is the center of the zipper. So anyway, that idea of what is the L and who is an Elohim is one that can translate the vorticity. The irony is, you know, if the Elohim were the fallen ones, they were the ones who could not lucid dream, so calling them, and they therefore could not die well. And that means Nephilim are fallen, or DNA that doesn't implode or make the L. So generally, the Elohim were the wannabes. They weren't the actual ones who could do it.
You know, that's fascinating that you would say that, Dan. That's one of the obstacles that I'm trying to overcome is the ability to lucid dream. It seems like in the DMT realm, I have full control of myself. But in a dream state, I can never grasp the concept that I'm dreaming. Any suggestions for people facing that?
Well, practicing lucid dreaming is the essence of getting immortal, preparing to die. It means your plasma, your aura, your ka, your boat into the underworld, is becoming phase coherent. In other words, if you don't get a big aura, you miss the purpose of life, and you don't take it through death. It's even more important than your checkbook. So getting a coherent aura, of course, means, you know, live food and yoga and very much about living in a coherent charge environment, which means away from the metal city and electrosmog. You know, obviously you need a magnetic map for your bed. You need to know that a dreaming track in Australia is a coherent magnetic line by measurement. And therefore, if you want to go somewhere in your dream, you're going to need a road. And regarding the DMT, I would say, you know, the molecule does emulate the endorphin and trigger that pineal. The problem is that if you can't make it from yourself, from within, you probably are not going to be able to take it with you when you die. So it's probably useful to have a few of those experiences. But generally, then you need to learn to make chemistry from within. I would call it maybe the Terence McKenna mistake, and because that's all that you take with you when you go. And again, it's not an arbitrary or even unmeasurable suggestion. It's very measurable. You simply measure your aura for coherence with the GDV, Kolobkov's, you know, calibrated terbium, and you can see the holes in your aura that arise from too much drug experience, and that then invites in astral parasites.
Well, that is true. That is definitely true, and I agree with that statement, especially in regards to a lot of these street drugs that have come out, LSD, ecstasy, methamphetamines, cocaine. I've seen these people. As a matter of fact, I met somebody today who was trying to get off heroin, and the poor guy, I mean, you could see he had something inside of him. There were holes in his aura and his spirit. And I gave him my number and said, look, if you need to talk to me at any time, give me a call 24 hours a day. You know, I felt so bad. I wish I could have done something for this guy. But Santos, any thoughts on the after-death experience?
Not really. I would like to also be good at lucid dreaming, and I'm aware that I need to make efforts to do that.
I'm right there with you.
Probably a little bit slightly on the lazy side, but my son keeps telling me you need a notepad. I believe, is that right, Dan? A notepad and pen.
Yeah, setting intention helps you. It's how you steer tornadoes. You know, your intent in your dream, your plasma projector, your wings, your arc angle. Is basically your intent, is the same way you steer a faster-than-light UFO. So getting your intent lined up. But your intent becomes phase coherent when your aura is coherent. And just one more little thought on the drug thing. You know, I think Ananda did get one thing right from Norway. He said the difference between Enlil Yahweh Amun, who was not the half-brother, he was a clone of Enki. The reason that his religion, the Amun Ra, religion of Egypt, was parasitic, was their drug of choice was mushroom, whereas the Enki Atun, Samuel, the sun god cult, which became Akhenaten, and Tut, which became the Jesus legend. The reason they were non-parasitic was they used the soma for the acacia, which was a non-parasitic and a drug of more astral hygiene to gain leverage in the astral.
Well, that's what DMT is, and if it's made properly, it really is pulled from the acacia, which is my understanding, has, you know, many also spiritual implications, especially within societies, showing the acacia branches and things as they did have access to that already.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Moses, the burning bush, was an acacia bush, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I definitely know Solomon, you know, just for, you know, the cult of Solomon, they were definitely utilizing it I think even the Acacia traces into the Cassia or the Cassia or Cassiopeia, that constellation, and what the Ethiopians had gathered there in Upper Egypt.
And you know, Castaneda said the first time you go to the mushroom, you know, you think that you're seeing through it, and you're seeing through its interstellar mycelial spore fabric, and you can see through that, and it's an organ of perception. But the second time you go to the same mushroom, you realize it is seeing through you. The difference, of course, is who has the most centripetal force.
Scott, anything you want to add?
Yeah, actually, this one, I'd like to share an astral experience that I've had on several occasions, something I've witnessed, and I'd actually like your guys' opinion on this, especially you, Dan, because you know a lot of the science behind the physics of reality. But, all right, let's take the universe. We'll call the universe, I mean, it's probably far more vast than this, but take several galaxies, like a cluster of galaxies. Zoom into a galaxy, so now you have one galaxy, keep zooming, you found a solar system. Zoom in, keep zooming in, zoom into a life form, zoom into their cell, go into their atom, keep going and going and going, and then eventually the exterior will fold in as it implodes, it'll unfold as though it were like a toroidal motion, like a toroidal configuration. So as you're going down, eventually it's going to unfold into everything, and you're going to come back to that same cluster of galaxies if you follow the same linear, not exactly linear, but the same chain that you followed the first time. But basically what I'm saying is, literally, as above, so below.
Yes, as like, beautifully refers to the principle of fractality in that famous film, Powers of Ten, which sort of animates what you just said. You see that the structure of the nucleus looks like a solar system, etc. The thing that animates the whole thing, of course, is golden mean ratio, which is proven to be the structure of hydrogen, and, of course, interstellar relations, as in black holes, as Mossin proved. So the new information, that golden mean ratio, optimizes the principle of fractality, and the new information also is that fractality of the out, as above, so below, is actually what makes the whole thing centripetal, and therefore self-organizing, and causes not just gravity, but mindfulness itself. And that really brings us to what's the beautiful nature of the principle here. And I would use Tom Bearden's film on the phase conjugation in the structure of the atom and the structure of the nucleus. It's the climax of our new article, fractalfield.com/mathematicsoffusion. And basically Tom Bearden says, look, this here nucleus is just a rolling ball of plasma. And when you pump it with a phase conjugate wave, suddenly it implodes and you make fusion, you make gravity, make scalar waves and all the cool stuff. But the new information is that that makes the nucleus, particularly of hydrogen, in a way an organ of perception, which is to say, perception itself is caused by when phase conjugation, and when I say phase conjugation, just visualize two pine cones learning to kiss noses, which is to say a caduceus from two sides. And when waves converge like that, which is now we know is literally the physics of nucleus, and literally precisely by equation, the physics of hydrogen, which is the center of DNA and the center of the sun, of course, and the center of most fusion. That is the very nature and the definition of perception, for example, as Bill Tiller proved that focused attention causes electric fields to compress. Therefore, you are as conscious as how much charge your focus is causing to compress. In other words, the power of your attention is measurable electrically. Very simple. Did you cause an electric field to compress, to get centripetal? So now it's obvious why that's the cause of perception. If you want to measure peak perception, you measure brainwave EEG. If the alpha to beta is golden mean ratio, which is called bliss or ecstasy or enlightenment, suddenly the plasma ball at the center of your brain, just like the plasma ball at the center of hydrogen, started to phase conjugate and implode. And you call that perception, sorting waves into phase, which is precisely how a physicist defines phase conjugate optics. And by the way, when you make phase conjugate optics and you cause time reversal and self-organization, which is well known in the physics of phase conjugate optics, you can only time reverse, that is to say, to go back to the near past, if you're going back to a state of more order. My friend Bob Swada, who taught phase conjugate optics at the University of Buffalo, Roswell Cancer Institute, and then died of cancer. His answering machine said, well, leave a message and I'll phase conjugate back to you in the near past. But the lesson here of time reversal, somebody asked about making this practical. In the Bible, when they say, I will raise a Shem unto the Lord, and that word Shem became our word, the altar in the church, that's how the word was translated, Shem, and later became our word shaman, and became the word chem in skiing and chemistry and alchemy, which now we know means access to a black hole. But I will raise a Shem unto the Lord meant I will build the stones to make a phase conjugate dielectric, because that's the only way I time reverse and eliminate aging, the definition of the Garden of Eden, electrically. So, but guess what? You can't time reverse your body, eliminate aging, to the near past, unless, in fact, you were in a more ordered state in that past.
7, do you want to jump in?
You know, I always, I'm always ready to jump in, man. I'm just, like I said, I don't know. I was just talking to, I have, of course, some people that came over for the show. Everyone's just, you know, really interested in seeing us, you know, open this thing up and start really discussing, you know, the ground zero situation and the transformation. Of course, there's just been this massive awakening for people within the last 2 or 3 years. But of course, you know, as the greats say, you know, what are they awakening to? And like, I really want to now talk about, you know, building up this energy within the body. And as Dan would just say, when you notice those two pine cones coming together, that is exactly what you see when the third eye opens. You see this cornucopic field, or this field that allows you the ability to mesh over this reality so you can see what is also here. That's the other thing about, you know, what's out of the visibility of most people. And I think it's also an extreme disadvantage that you have individuals such as even the Rosicrucian Society, many of the individuals that are deep within there. You have these individuals that have astral abilities. And where we bottleneck is lucid dreaming is like riding a wave, as I talked about before. The right hand is the external reality, left hand's internal reality. So you need to learn how to use these in balance. It's interesting how we look at most people are right-handed, and I just want to really address the masses now. And that just shows you right off the bat somewhat of the imbalance that exists when we pop up in this world. I would like us to steer this conversation into the creators of this particular matrix, because I know that we've done enough research to identify the immediate universe. As far as the grand totality of this, I believe that the grand totality is in motion and always creating new things. So thus, you know, unless you can move really fast, and as Dan talks about, you be able to impact, implode yourself properly, to even catch up to the point of where things are beginning or originating from, you need to be really fast. But where we are, is more like a shadow or a smear far back of what is taking place. And that is also from my deep understanding of how the future is read, that people who are able to ascend, and I do want to mention Elohim are here now. Like Elohim, if we really get into the deeper text about, you know, the original ones who were capable of imploding their system, they've passed that ability on to their seed as they went on to do things that we're still connected to, because we're connected just like a baby is connected to the mother's umbilical cord. And even if that umbilical cord is cut in physicality, it doesn't mean it's cut on a spiritual level. So we're always connected to the ancestors, but they're still expanding into things. It seems like we're kind of descending this rope of what we know and what we already know. This is what I talk about in the yoga. It's like you go back into these primitive poses, such as the dog pose, and this is where we've already been. We've already ran the whole zodiac wheel, what I call the gambit. And now, because of the ignorance of this society and the ones with knowledge not willing to speak forth about, you know, what is really going on, what's happening is you see humanity kind of going into a descending and acting like they're ascending. the most dangerous thing. Really, the reason why the New Age movement was formed, because I have the deeper documents of when the whole idea of ascension and activation was going to be presented to humanity, and how that was just going to be a replacement for Christianity, which is also the last deception that has come to the world that has left our ancestors stagnant. So it's also like the Mashiach or the Christ or the Kundalini must come forth within all individuals in order for us to awake something this big as Earth, to awake Earth's Kundalini. And I think a lot of people see it the other way around. They see like Earth or somebody else or some spaceship is supposed to come and activate, and then they're going to activate. But I don't think that's what's going on here.
It's like, really true, Sevan. That's beautifully said, that, you know, if you do the discipline to get your aura into a geometry where the pine cones can kiss, which means you need to avoid electrosmog. Basically, the electrical definition of sacred space is the only place where your aura can unpack. And it's correct to call that the awakening, because it's literally the further and further propagation of your field according to the laws of phase conjugation, pine cones extending. And what you say about left and right, sort of like the future and the past, is also very good physics, because, of course, if you study the physics, you see that the right and left hemispheres of the brain, the difference is primarily centripetal versus centrifugal vortex. And that net difference in advanced physics is called phase conjugate or time biased, which is to say one is accelerating, imploding, the other is exploding. That's the difference between the intuitive and the logical brain, right and left hemisphere. And the reason that that is time penetrating is actually because at the center, because of golden ratio in the golden pine cone there, the phase velocities accelerate through the speed of light by golden ratio multiples times the speed of light, and that's called time travel. A practical example, just so people get the flavor, when Nostradamus learned to see the future, the turning point was he taught the royal family, the House of Savoy, the queen, how to have a baby. And therefore, they let him see the whole library in Turin. And so he learned that when he set up his tower at Saint-Remy to see the future, Nostradamus, he needed to be in the center of a giant magnetic pentagram. There's five places named Magdalen Tower around Saint-Remy and Le Baume, where Nostradamus' tower was, and the Magdalen Caves, etc. Giant pentagram, just like Rennes Chateau. And so then when he sets up his water dish with the egg-shaped black polished back, the center of his water dish, the optical reflection was profoundly phase conjugate, implosive, and that defines time reversal. And the other thing Nostradamus realized when he was looking in there, that he wasn't seeing the necessary future. He was only seeing the probable future. And that means if what you're seeing was not a more ordered state, you're not going to see through. Well, guess what? Every single time traveler at Montauk consistently reported was none of them, not one of them, could see through 2012. That's been reported by a bunch of them. Guess what? They call that kind of a speed bump for the time travelers, that the amount of disorder that converges in late 2012 makes penetration through that phase wall the great challenge.
You know, that makes sense. I've talked to remote viewers. I've talked to several people, and they all say psychics, they can't see beyond 2012. I think you explained what that veil is.
Our lucid dreamers have been quite clear here. We've been taking a poll of them. At first, they saw a 100-foot wave hit Portland, L.A., and Sydney. And I'd have to credit Bill and our Nostradamus connections there for those visions. But then a bunch of lucid dreams came in even more clear, that they say late October. You know, the crop circle people say September 12 is the high water, but these lucid dreamers are all agreeing late October, that the volcano, which is now in the headlines in New Zealand, becomes the Antarctica volcano, Mount Erebus. And of course, that goes across Antarctica, a whole string of volcanoes later this year. Is their vision is very clear, actually. And as a result, one half of the 9,000-foot ice sheet, you know, if the North Pole melts, basically nothing happens. But if the South Pole melts 9,000 feet, it's well known in physics that the sea level rise is 200 feet. And all these dreamers are clear and consistent. They saw half that ice slide in with with a 60 to 100 feet sea level rise, which they have a couple hours notice in the southern hemisphere, and we get 2 to 3 days notice in the northern hemisphere later this year, taking out most every coastal city on the planet, all the oil and all the ports and most of the nuclear plants, and that's what they see.
You know, it's amazing you said Portland, Dan. Let me just make this comment real quick, and then I'll pass it right back over to you, Seven. I was in a deep meditative state not too long ago, and we were contemplating moving to Portland, and I heard many messages in this meditation, and one of them was, you can't move to Portland. There's going to be an event, and you have to stay in Colorado where you are in the mountains. And I didn't say that something was going to happen to Portland. I mean, the event could have been that I just meet somebody here locally, or, you know, it just says you have to stay in Colorado. But since this happened, you are probably the fifth person on the show to mention a tidal wave type scenario in Portland.
The lucid dreamers did not see a tsunami wave. They saw a wave that rose gradually and then just stayed high, 60 to 100 feet sea level. They even saw them desperately trying to plug the Straits of Gibraltar because they had a day or two notice and they failed. So at that point, of course, the globe, since most coastal cities and a dramatic portion of the planet's population, you know, had to move. But they had a day's notice, but it means, you know, the end of most of the power and all the global oil, and it's a major thing.
Wow. Santos, you've been kind of quiet back there. Do you want to chime in on anything?
Yeah, look, I'm just thinking that the necessity of us to be to prepare ourselves, you know, because these visions are coming for a good reason. We need to remember who we are, and it's, basically, what's happening is these people that are attuned to the higher vibration are picking up this, that potentially what could be coming could be just disastrous, you know. So we need to get the vibration ready, because whatever happens, we need to be right so that we can go to the next place, you see.
Definitely.
You know, I think also, you know, my teachers always taught me, you know, we were trained to prevent this kind of stuff. We, you know, as they talk about the Gigi, they used to man the ship, meaning that we had the ability to take Earth wherever we wanted to when we had activated humans. And that's the other thing about this, you know, phage conjugation, et cetera. It doesn't become something that people can do in a reality where, again, Samael is riding on their backs. Like, I think, again, I'm really just trying to figure out if we're really going to pull out the tools, or we're going to wait until it gets all the way up to the point where it's actually going to happen, and then we pull out the tools. Because I'm also seeing where our fears are attracting our children. Like, our fears are where we won't go. And because of that, our children are basically headlong into the abyss. Like, I wanted to bring it up earlier, but if you didn't notice, like, shows such as Coast to Coast only feature individuals now talking about Galatia, and talking about the darker paths that we know that have been opened up by the same individuals that we're calling the elite, and we're calling elite parties that have...
You know what, Seven? We've got to take this top of the hour break. We skipped the bottom of the hour, but on the other side, we'll go until the top of the hour. So we'll be right back right here on Truth Frequency.